playoff bubble in Orlando is about to burst. So right now, the rest of the league is going around making changes. We saw the Sacramento Kings hire a new general manager in Monty McNair. So who better to break down the move than the guy who broke it? My former colleague, Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, previously worked for USA Today, Sports Illustrated, Fan House, and the Sacramento Bee. He certainly got his claws into what's going on inside Sacramento, dating back to covering that team for years with the Bee. Sam, first of all, it's great to have you on, brother. How are you holding up in the bubble right now, my man?
Michael, thank you so much for having me. It's good to hear your voice. I'm hanging. You know what I mean? We were just talking offline about kind of the bubble life and been here about a month. I'm going to be doing the entire back end. And it's a kind of a mixture of kind of experiences. You got the personal tug. I got a family with a wife and two small ones at home. And so not used to being gone for this long. Then you have the professional challenge, which honestly, I feel lucky to be here in terms of, you know, what I joked with somebody yesterday is a little bit like a NBA sports writers camp. You know what I mean? It's like all the games in one spot, all the executives in one spot, the coaches and sharing space. And, you know, you're very good at this yourself, kind of working on relationships and getting to know people that you might have known a little bit, you know, even better. And so I'm hanging in, man, but it's something else.
No, I'm glad to hear. And I, on a side note, I certainly appreciate the kind words on the relationships and stuff. You know, even during our time at The Athletic, I remember you introduced me to a certain executive that I appreciate. And you were always great about sharing my work and just being a good sounding board for people to talk to and bounce ideas off of and whatnot. One of the best people in the business and a great colleague. So I certainly thank you for all those times and whatnot.
Thank
when
you,
we were hanging out together at The Athletic online Slack and whatnot. But nah, man, I'm glad to hear that you're hanging in out there. You've been doing some work on the ground there and also some reporting. I touched on it in the intro about Monty McNair coming in as the GM for Sacramento. You broke that story with Shams Charania on The Athletic. Monty gets the gig over Sachin Gupta and Wes Wilcox. A lot of candidates pulled out of the running for that job leading up to those top three. From your vantage point, when you look at Monty, what do you think he can bring to this team that has the longest playoff drought in the league right now? And what did you think of him getting it over Sachin Gupta and Wes Wilcox?
Yeah, I mean, interesting search. You know, you already kind of hit on one of the key factors that honestly was kind of mostly overlooked in the coverage, overlooked in the commentary, is that a lot of, you know, the Kings' reputation for the last 14 years is the kind of thing that has put them in a challenging position when it comes to conducting a search like this. So, you know, they settled on six candidates and each of them bringing something different to the table. But before that, you know, and the three that pulled out being Trajan Langan, Adam Simon, and Calvin Booth. But before that, you know, you can definitely believe that a lot of guys made it clear through back channels that they didn't have interest. And partly, I think, because of concerns about Vivek Ranadive, the Kings owner, who's got such a checkered past in his short time in the NBA world. You know, I think money came into play, you know what I mean, like it always does. So they get to this place where it's Monty and Sachin Gupta and Wes Wilcox. And to the credit of all three of those guys, I heard nothing but fantastic things about the impression they left in the process. And near the end, you know, to paint the picture, they were interviewing with Vivek, of course. Joe Dumars was involved, who now has the chief strategy officer title with the Kings, but is going to be a voice on basketball. He reports directly to Vivek, and the new GM, Monty McNair, also reports directly to Vivek. But I mean, you know, there were meetings in Vivek's town of Atherton, California, right in the Silicon Valley land. And all three guys did very, very well. And I do think it was a pretty spirited debate up until the end about who the pick was going to be. Now, to be fair, the Kings have pushed back pretty hard on that prospect. And if I had to guess, I think they just they want to make sure that Monty feels like, no, he was our guy. I like the Monty hire. For one, I've gotten to know him a decent amount over the past couple of years, doing a lot of coverage on the Rocket side. And specifically, where I find him so interesting is he's definitely, you know, every person for the most part on that candidate list had a fairly deep analytics background. But with Monty, I've seen him in real time have the ability to not only to, you know, kind of extrapolate what is happening with his team analytically and make the best of a roster, but to communicate with the coaching staff. And I actually did a behind the scenes story a couple of years ago where I was in on a Rockets coaches meeting in the playoffs and watched Monty in the middle of that process. And as you know, Michael, like that's the debate with analytics, is that especially the kind of more old school basketball guys that say, that's great, don't put a spreadsheet in my face. Like, you got to have the ability to bridge the gap between analytics and hoop and the hardwood. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen, Monty's really good at that. And the last thought there real quick is he, and this matters a lot, is that he's just very well thought of in terms of kind of inspiring respect and even loyalty around the league. People like Monty a lot, and not just in the analytics community. And that's going to help him with agents, where you got to have rapport and you got to have the ability to have people think that you're not an a-hole, for lack of a better way of putting it. And so I'm curious to see how he does on the job.
Well, I'll say this. I think a lot of agents liked Vlade Divac. He certainly paid a lot of guys well. I don't think the contracts turned out as well. But if you were a center, you had, and your agent had Vlade Divac on speed dial, and you know, if you were even a backup point guard, you know, Corey Joseph made life changing money with him and other guys. So it's, I think certainly Monty's personality is going to be needed for them in Sacramento. I would say that when I looked at Sachin Gupta, I thought, considering, from what I remember correctly, the Kings had some flirtations with Sam Hinkie years ago, or at least considered the idea of bringing him in. And I was saying to myself, well, Sachin was one of the guys behind the scenes in Philadelphia that was an orchestrator of a lot of those trades behind the scenes. And for those who may not know, he developed the trade machine technology. So definitely a smart guy, a young guy at that. And you touched on a lot of the guys pulling out and going through maybe back channels to express that. Couple things. I think, one, the salary. Two, you talked about the reputation of Sacramento over the past 14 years or so. It has not been pretty there. But, you know, when some of those guys were even being mentioned, like Trajan Langdon and Calvin Booth, they already have GM titles. Why would you make, to me, I never understood why they would make a lateral move. I think a lot of it came down to how much power and juice you were going to have in that organization. With Joe Dumars being up top, I know certainly here in the New York area, there was a lot of buzz that Scott Perry would find his way there. He got a one-year deal in New York, and he had previously worked there. So a quote-unquote interview process wouldn't have necessarily been needed for him. But, you know, when you look at the dynamics of that front office, how much juice do you think Joe Dumars has, and how much is it Vivek kind of calling the shots at this point as Sacramento tries to end that playoff drought starting next season?
I feel like it's to be determined. I need to, you know, watch Joe move a little bit more, because up to this point, you know, he had the advisor title last year and he has not been with the organization all that long. And for the most part, man, after, and I forget the timeline of exactly when they hired him, but for the most part of his tenure, he's been even beyond in the shadows. He's been completely MIA. He doesn't come to games. He's not around, you know, and I would ask every once in a while, like, is he, you know, talking to Vlade on the phone? What's he doing? And they would always say positive things about him. But then near the middle of the regular season, and honestly, when things started getting pretty hot and heavy, and Shams and I had, and Jason Jones had put a story out about, you know, inside King's Landing and some of the drama that was happening with frustration with Luke Walton, frustration with Vlade. Right around that time, Joe started occasionally coming to games. And Joe lives in L.A., and he would make the trip up and be around, and you'd see him sitting with Vivek courtside. So going forward, I don't know what to think, because this new title they gave him, Chief Strategy Officer, it goes well beyond basketball. There's business stuff, and he's got experience in that sector as well. And you kind of hit on this earlier too. I mean, some of the candidates coming in, I think all of them wanted some clarity on the question of where does Joe's voice fall here? So they made it very clear that the GM doesn't work for Joe, but his voice still matters. And I think the thing that just Kings fans are nervous about is that in locally, and as I live in that area still, there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that Vivek, he's got this habit that has kind of repeated itself over and over again, where he'll have a GM and then he'll have a former player, which in his mind is like the Jerry West role, which I get. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but what's happened several times now is that when things get a little sideways with the GM, then that former player who has Vivek's ear ultimately becomes a threat to the GM. And the irony of, like Vlade Divac stepping down was a direct result of Vivek telling Vlade that he wanted Joe to be above Vlade on the basketball ops food chain. And Vlade did not react well to that, and he bounced. And before that, and this is the ironic part, you had Pete D'Alessandro as the GM, and then out of nowhere, they brought in Vlade Divac, who obviously is a beloved former Kings player. And he was the one in the quasi advisor role, and Pete wasn't happy about that. I mean, I remember hearing an anecdote about, Vlade was trying to kind of ingratiate himself with that front office, with Mike Brotz and guys who had been there doing it for a couple of years, and they would have front office meetings, and they just didn't trust Vlade, so they would have meetings, right in front of him, and kind of almost make sure that he knew he wasn't invited. And that's not a real healthy dynamic. And it's not, in hindsight, I feel bad for the people involved, because it's not really their fault. I mean, I understand what a Pete D'Alessandro would have been feeling at that point. I understand the way Vlade felt when Joe became kind of put in his lap as a threat. And it's Vivek who's created that sort of a culture. And I think, again, going forward, that's the kind of stuff that they need to fix.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, how many former Kings can they bring back? Is Mike Bibby or Chris Webber coming back at this point? Time will tell down the line. Obviously, I'm half joking on that one, but
Well, it's funny because they've got a few of them around, and I say this all the time. I mean, Doug Christie is on the media side right now, and he's doing color commentary on TV. But I've seen Doug work with a Buddy Hield, work with some of the young dudes, and I've told him myself, like, man, you need to be in player development. Like, he's really good, and they've got Bobby Jackson on the coaching staff, and so I just think the right use of the kind of old Kings heads would be great, but they need clarity of structure, clarity of power, and really, and this is a longer conversation, but it's just the ownership stuff there is real challenging, because they've got a large group of minority owners that is always kind of resentful of the position that Vivek has, and so just again, the dynamics are not ideal.
Well, whether it's ownership or someone in the front office, I think especially after last season, I want to know who is banging the table for Marvin Bagley ultimately over Luka Doncic, because that right now, that's going to be one of the biggest draft blunders if Luka continues on the path that he's on right now. And he remains healthy and continues to have a productive career the way he started so far. But who ended up pounding the table for Marvin Bagley? Because that decision is ultimately going to shape the Kings for the next 15 years, and it's not looking great so far, certainly.
No, it's a tough one for sure. It's funny because it's, I mean, I got to take Vlade at his word. Vlade has said publicly and said privately that he wanted Bagley, and part of it
Oof.
was
Vladdy should have lied then.
I know. Well, my hesitation, I don't know. I've had people tell me that, oh, it's not really how it was, and the truth will come out eventually. I'm like, I don't know. Like, he seemed pretty genuine when he said it. And like you said, he's got all the reason in the world to spin a different story. So here's the part where I get, I'm a big proponent of in life in general, trying to understand people's actions, even if, it doesn't excuse them. You got to remember, they were through the roof on De'Aaron Fox. He had just had a breakout year. They're feeling great about him. And so you had a general concern that a guy like Luka is going to take the ball out of De'Aaron's hands. And so you're going to take some of the superpower away from a young guy that you think could be your franchise centerpiece. There's a lot of subplots we could get into beyond that. I mean, you've got the Eastern European connection between Vlade and Luka, and even a few kind of path crossings between Vlade and Luka's father. Nothing real major at all, but he was very aware of the family. Basketball wise, I think the most important factor was it was just the decision to pair a young point guard with what they thought was a promising big, and that it was more complimentary than doing something like De'Aaron with Luka, which they thought would be complicated and possibly kind of almost put a ceiling on both players because they were playing alongside one another. But it is a brutal pick. It is the reason that Vlade's not there. I mean, if he picked Luka and Luka took off, Vlade would absolutely still be in charge of the Kings basketball ops. And it is an all-timer, you know what I mean? And making matters even worse, I do believe that, Vivek was on Bagley as well. There's kind of a new person in the Kings space. Vivek's son, Anil, was also part of this GM search, and he's kind of inserted himself into the equation over the course of the past year. And, I've heard several times that he was pounding the table for Luka. And so you can only imagine, if you're the owner's son and you look back and you think you got it right, that might drive some of your moves going forward. So yeah, it's a brutal one, and not to make excuses for Vladimir or them, but as you know, Michael, it's also every team's got a list of the worst misses they've had. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I had a fun podcast with Mike Zarin of the Celtics, the assistant GM, and Tim Conley, the Nuggets GM, and it was a lot of fun. They went down memory lane on the back end of the podcast, and they talked about some of their misses. And you sit there, and it's like for the Celtics, and credit to Mike for kind of just owning it. And he's talked about it before, but Jimmy Butler, they had Juwan Johnson and Jimmy Butler as that was their two-man list. And Juwan's nowhere to be found, and Jimmy's pushing this kind of underrated Heat team into a possible finals appearance. And the one that Conley had shared, the one that gets a lot of focus, is Donovan Mitchell. They actually traded Donovan, as you know, and sent him to Utah. And so, I mean, draft misses are part of it, but certainly for the Kings, that was a painful one.
That's one way to put it. But also, now that the Kings have made this change in the front office, the first thing that came to my mind was, what does this mean now for Luke Walton? He's had some, I'll call them disagreements with Buddy Hield, certainly about his role and him coming off the bench. They paid a lot of money to him. What do you think that this means for Luke Walton's future as coach of the Sacramento Kings?
It's tough to tell. I mean, I think he's definitely fine for the foreseeable future. I do think that the message was kind of sent that, and ultimately to Monty, because that's who they hired, that, they're pretty invested both financially and kind of spiritually in Luke, although the finances, I think, are playing a massive part there. So it's going to be all about the relationship between Monty and Luke. You already have a little bit of a relationship with Ken Canella, the Kings assistant GM, who is going to remain. And I do think that Monty is going to make an addition in the front office as well. very likely to be a former player. So who knows who that guy's going to be. You know, it's going to be the relationship stuff. Luke is good at relationships. He was very close with Vlade. I know, you know, knowing Monty a little bit, knowing Luke even better, I could easily see those two guys clicking. And then, you know, they got to talk about the roster. I mean, they've got some really challenging situations and kind of dynamics to work on. First of all, you've got the Buddy Hield situation. He does not see himself as a sixth man, is not happy as a sixth man. That problem is not going away, and you gave him starter money. So, you know, do you test the market on Buddy? Can you get anything back? What do you do with Buddy Hield? The Marvin Bagley situation has just been just brutal for 2 years. The poor guy just can't be healthy. And, you know, and again, that just compounded the criticism when it comes to not taking Luka. Even De'Aaron Fox, he's been mostly a real positive, but I think, you know, going forward, they want to try to get more leadership out of De'Aaron, try to have more connectivity between him and the organization. So I feel like the one I'm leaving out is Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's a restricted free agent. And I guarantee you that Bogdan, who is looking at this situation now and just simply deciding, am I really buying into this? And you can't really blame him if he'd be somewhat skeptical just because of all of the turmoil and now the change. So they have some decent young pieces, but a lot of important decisions coming up.
Well, for Bogdanović, you don't really have a choice because he's restricted. But, I mean, you know, his way to get out of there, get a bag from the Atlanta Hawks or somebody that has cap space. And, you know, as we look ahead towards free agency, every guy and their mother is going to be trying to get a bag from them. And Travis Schlenk, who has the most cap space to give at a time when the cap is not going to be as high as people thought. You know, we don't know whether it's going to stay the same or decrease. Time will tell, but that's going to affect a lot of guys in free agency. But, you know, you touched on earlier about the relationships aspect of the league and hiring guys. We'll take a look at the coaching carousel now, which is spinning around and around more actively a little bit. We've got 6 coaching openings: the Chicago Bulls, the Houston Rockets, Indiana Pacers, New Orleans Pelicans, the OKC Thunder most recently, and the Philadelphia 76ers. I guess we'll touch on Chicago first. When I look at them, Kenny Atkinson to me always seemed like an ideal fit there, given what he did in Brooklyn and building up the culture and really developing guys, which Chicago's built around. They've got a ton of young guys in Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and at the guards, Chris Dunn and Kobe White among them. So I thought he was a guy that made sense. And you've heard, obviously, the talk about assistants and Ime Udoka. Wes Unseld Jr., who worked with Arturis Karnisovas, the new head of basketball operations for Chicago. I think he's a sleeper guy. And somewhere in there, I could see Billy Donovan having interest as well, because I think they're on the rise. When you take a look at that Chicago Bulls team and the coaching vacancy, what do you foresee?
It's one of those. I mean, you broke that down really well. I'm curious to see. You know how Michael sometimes, you know, somebody who definitely knows kind of what's happening gets in your ear and essentially predicts how this is going to go, and then you kind of sit back and wait, and it's almost kind of entertaining to see if that ends up being the case. So a person who qualifies as that kind of voice had told me a couple of weeks ago that they thought that when all the dust settled, that it would be Wes Unseld Jr.'s job. And so, you know, I kind of stocked that away in my back pocket and moved on. And then fast forward to the other day here in the bubble, had a pretty funny moment at Nuggets practice, because Wes, of course, is lead assistant for the Nuggets under Michael Malone right now. And the Nuggets wrap up practice, and Michael, who had already shouted out Wes in the previous night's media session, Michael walks over to a couple of us reporters who were at practice, and it was pretty funny because he just went out of his way to to introduce Wes to anybody and everybody who didn't know him. And he was just like, have you guys met Wes Unseld, you know, fantastic coach, going to be a head coach one day. And said hello to me, said hello to Sekou Smith from Turner and NBA TV. And, you know, Michael, I'm not normally the best at landing jokes. I'm far from a comedian, but I did okay when I said to Michael, I said, man, it's really too bad that y'all don't know the GM in Chicago. Like, what are you going to do about that? Like, you know, and so that's like the no-brainer pick, is that the connection between Arturis and Wes does seem to be very relevant. But on the flip side, the early indications I got was that, you know, Wes was interviewing, was part of the field. Like, this was not any sort of thing where behind the scenes he was getting handed the reins and they were going to put together some sort of fake search. So I don't know where that'll settle. And in general, I can't remember the last time we had this many vacancies and also this many high profile coaches available. You mentioned Billy Donovan. Now we got Mike D'Antoni on the market as well. Nate McMillan. So a lot of big names, and then a lot of up and comers too. So a lot of candidates to choose from.
And if I remember correctly, years ago, I think you had done a story with, or at least an interview with Mike D'Antoni. He gets let go. Well, shouldn't say let go. That's not the correct phrase. He's no longer going to be coaching the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, they wanted him back, so he walked.
Yeah, let's correctly state that. Yeah. So Mike decides he wants something different. Houston's got an opening, but we'll start with Mike for a sec. I had heard for a while that, you know, I guess you could say through either back channels or, you know, just some scuttlebuttle around the league, that after the season, Mike D'Antoni to the Pacers could really be a thing. Now, Indiana has the coaching opening. Nate McMillan's out. But they've also talked to a bunch of other candidates. They've done a lot of extensive research. I know they've done background on Kenny Atkinson as well. So, and again, I could see Billy Donovan being added to that mix as well. He'd certainly be a guy that Indiana would be interested in talking to, from what I've heard. Not sure where they are on that process, though. But what did you think of the possibility of D'Antoni going to Indiana? Had you heard that as well? And where do you think the Pacers ultimately go? Because they haven't usually spent that much, usually, on a head
right.
coach. So I don't know if they fit his price tag.
If I had to handicap it, I don't see that as a fit, and I don't see that happening. It was real loud right out the gate when Mike decided not to return. Actually, you know, the noise started when they fired Nate. The D'Antoni noise was there right away. And then kind of in the second phase, you started hearing that was a little overblown, that, like you said, it was going to be a pretty exhaustive search. You know, another name that's been tied there is Mike Brown, you know, the Warriors assistant, who, you know, I had heard that Steve Kerr, you know, was kind of advocating on his behalf with the Pacers. And so the D'Antoni thing, cost-wise, you alluded to it. I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, guy's accomplished a lot, and he gets paid a lot, and I think he expects a lot. So that's a factor. The part where it did make a lot of sense is that with Nate, there was, for the last couple of years, you know, even though he did such a great job of, you know, overachieving with that roster, especially with all the injuries, there was a little bit of a push and pull and a friction between him and the front office from the analytics standpoint. And, you know, not shooting enough threes, you know, too much mid-range, and kind of just not, they were very good defensively, but not wanting offensively to lean into the direction that a lot of people in today's game are trying to push things. So from that standpoint, Mike makes a ton of sense. He would certainly check that box. But, you know, but again, ultimately, I think it's probably somebody else there. And I wonder where, if anywhere, Mike is going to land. You know, he's definitely going to be considered for the Philadelphia situation, but it's not, you know, like I was told that the word considered is perfect. You know what I mean? It's not front runner. It's not a shortlister. You know, they'll think about it. And I think Billy Donovan would be above D'Antoni on that list. So,
Interesting.
yeah, I mean, that's my sense anyway. And so, and that's where when Mike was contemplating his Houston future, it's funny because I wrote and said all year long that it was highly unlikely that Mike would return to the Rockets. And then at the very end, the night that they lose to the Lakers, I wrote that he had not completely ruled out a return. And, that was partly born out of the fact that I do think that he looked around at the landscape and like New Orleans was a spot that I wondered about for him. But then I was then I because he's got history with Dave Griffin from Phoenix. But then I was told pretty, authoritatively before writing that story that fit was not going to happen for whatever reason. So I wondered if you know how it is in life in general, you could be mad at your partner and then you look around and you say, well, I don't know, this is still better than anything else out there, And so I thought maybe that he'd reconcile with the Rockets and move forward. Obviously that didn't happen, but another really talented coach was available.
Yeah, and you touched on Philly and New Orleans. Philly's roster construction at the end of the day, I don't know. As far as coaches, you can only coach what's on the floor. It's not a good fit right now. Elton Brand is going to have to make some changes to that roster to make them have better chemistry. In terms of a coach, you touched on Donovan. I think it would be interesting. He certainly had experience juggling a two-star team in OKC. When you look at Philadelphia, do you think there is a front runner at this point?
I don't. I mean, there might be. If there is, I'm not aware of them. The indication I got was that again, it's a real search with a lot of names. Ime Udoka is another one that, full disclosure, I just happen to like him a great deal, but I respect him, and there's part of me that thinks, his shot needs to come here at some point.
With Philadelphia or somewhere else?
I mean, I wonder. I don't know all the inter. I mean, I think he's qualified for any of these jobs, but he's got a fantastic rapport with players, and but he is the type of players coach who I think earns respect because, and I've seen this firsthand, he's pretty maniacal about the job. In fact, and this, it paints me as like the classic, bar hopping sports writer, but I remember one time during the playoffs a couple of years ago, inviting Ime to come have a beer after the game and join a couple of us scribes and kind of learning, at that time that he was just very serious person. Like, no, I don't drink and I got to go break down film, and that's kind of how he's cut. And I remember too, like his during his San Antonio days, and don't forget, and this always stuck with me. Ime still had some money to be made as a player overseas, and he gets a phone call from Greg Popovich that says, "Do you want to join my staff?" And he was smart enough to essentially sacrifice the last year or two of his international career to take advantage of this opportunity to coach with Pop. And that's a pretty fantastic thing to put on your resume. And then from there, when the Spurs built that team that included LaMarcus Aldridge, that's when I first started learning about Ime's ability to connect with players because LaMarcus, who is kind of by nature a fairly, I think, untrusting personality and a little bit of a what's the word I'm looking for? A little reclusive with his coworkers and teammates at different times, had a real connection and trust in Ime. And so, yeah, I think he's fantastic, and I'm curious to see if Elton Brand in that group might give him a shot in Philly. But again, it's man, it's almost hard, Michael. The coaching carousel phrase has never been more accurate because six teams and 25, 30, 35 different candidates. I mean, the moving parts with this whole landscape are pretty wild.
No, for sure. And I think there's a lot of leveraging and whatnot and trying to play up relationships. I do think there's a little bit more speculation out there than maybe there has been in past years. And Billy Donovan and Oklahoma City not coming together, in a way, it surprised me a little bit because the guy did such a great job with this team this year, and a lot of people projected them to be in the lottery, and they had a great playoff run and nearly advanced past that first round. I looked at that, and that signaled to me, all right, well, if Billy's not coming back, you might be looking at a rebuild here. You know, sure. There's always the Chris Paul trade speculation. Certainly the Milwaukee Bucks had been linked to them.
I really don't think that's happening, though, by the way. And, like, we wrote that the other day, and that's – and apologies for interjecting, but, like, the part where the Thunder situation gets confusing is that it's hard to get into the rebuild mode unless you move Chris. And myself and Eric Name, who covers the Bucks for us, as you know, have two sources who definitely know, telling us that, you know, the Bucks have zero plans of pursuing a Chris trade. Now, that could always change. I mean, I don't think that Giannis is banging that table, but you know how it is reporting wise. We'll leave a little bit of a sliver of a door open for the possibility, but we're told in fairly strong terms that Bucks situation with Chris is not going to evolve. So then it becomes, where is he going? You know, Miami is not doing that anymore because of their success. And that's going to be the rebuild kind of starts there for OKC.
No, for sure. I would say that I think in terms of Milwaukee, I'd say that's a fluid situation in the sense that if they get out to not as good of a start in the regular season, I think you could see that change. And just for me personally, I understand the financial ramifications of it, but I would also say that their time is now. And I certainly don't think having a guy like Chris Paul would hurt them. I don't know if they have the pieces necessarily to get it done. Financially, they can. You can always mix and match contracts. But, Steven Adams is a guy I certainly look for OKC to dangle out there. They've done it before. Dennis Schroeder as well. So, he's a guy who was in the sixth man of the year conversations. I don't know if his value in a way would be higher than it is right now. So I think it would certainly behoove Sam Presti to do that. And certainly this guy, Sam Presti is the guy who in fantasy football gets the most lopsided trade in his favor. And you and your friends are banging the table going, come on, man. Like, how do you make that deal with that guy? He is a guy that wins these trades. And even the Paul George trade, you look at it now in a vacuum and it's like, well, if the Clippers don't win and he gets Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari, which he's another guy that in terms of a rebuild, you bringing him back or not? He's going to cost this summer. There's certainly going to be speculation about the Knicks and his former agent, Leon Rose, who's the president now, have an interest and maybe on a short-term deal to help them get better. Save that for your back pocket for later. But he just always seems to – he's got so many draft picks that, I don't think Adam Silver or Mark Tatum should be announcing the picks. He could do it himself. So at that point, I do think they're trending towards a rebuild, but he also has a way of going in between a rebuild and a reload, because you saw it last year how OKC thrived with the players they had, but you touched on it. Chris Paul's the X factor there. When you look at that Thunder team, that coaching search has been a little bit more quiet in terms of names that are out there. They also are a team that historically doesn't spend a ton on a coach. I'm very curious to see who they hire, because there's also going to be pressure on Sam to get it right, considering the way Billy Donovan finished off. And to say that it was kind of I think he said in the press release that it was a mutual parting of ways. Well, if you're okay letting that guy walk, you got to have somebody coming in that's either going to really be key to a rebuild or have that team at the same level if you keep the roster back. So I think there's a little bit of pressure there on Sam. What are your thoughts on the OKC search?
No, I hear all that. I mean, I think the kind of agreement between Sam and Billy that bore out in the end was that, if you remember, I mean, Billy left Florida to come compete at a high level with the kind of roster that was title contending. And rebuilding, I just don't think was ever part of his NBA aspirations. And so, even though, you know, and Shams had reported this a few days ago, you know, they did offer him an extension, and he turned it down. That's just not surprising. And I think that you know, the nature of their arrangement and their relationship was contention. And once it was clear that those days were probably behind them, then, you know, they move on and they figure something else out. And Sam works in the shadows. And so I guarantee you he's thinking unconventionally about candidates. You know, I'm sitting here saying we have 35-ish candidate names, and I guarantee you that he's got some that we're not mentioning. And so maybe it'll be, I mean, you know, when they went after Billy Donovan, that was very unexpected at the time. And so, and there's not a rush because, yeah, you've got the draft and free agency coming up, but, you know, there's still a possibility that next season doesn't even start until February or March, which hopefully that's not the case. But, you know, the time element is not pressuring you right now. And then if there's anybody, you know, on these four teams in the bubble that you want to talk to, you got to basically wait just because, you know, nobody's coming in to quarantine for 7 days just to come talk to a candidate. So I really don't have any clue what Sam's going to do, but pretty good track record for the last 10 years or so. So curious to see.
Well said on that front. I would say to throw some assistance out there, maybe a Brian Keefe, Chris Finch. That you could. There's certainly guys that are outside the box that the average fan may not think of, but the wheels are spinning in his head. I agree with you there. We touched on a lot of the coaching carousel seats going up and down here, but I think the only two we didn't talk about so far was Houston and New Orleans. Both situations I thought could have been a fit for Ty Lue at a certain point, and certainly Philadelphia could have been as well at one point. Still could be. When you look at Houston and New Orleans, for me personally, when ultimately they talk about which job may be better out of those two, I look at that New Orleans team with Zion. You figure you're going to keep Ingram and match whatever offer sheet he gets. You got Jrue Holiday there. They've got some nice pieces. The Rockets, I think they are what they are. And I thought D'Antoni was the best coach for their style. Curious who they're going to bring in that could fit that style, up tempo and small ball, because I don't know how you're going to completely change that roster at this point. When you look at those Rockets and Pelicans coaching searches, what do you foresee in those two situations?
Yeah, I mean, Rockets are gonna a little bit like Indiana. They're gonna have a real search and a lot of names, I think. You know, I've written Jeff Van Gundy and Ty Lue like everybody else. Another name that I wouldn't surprise me to get involved is Alvin Gentry. You've got, you know, Alvin obviously followed Mike D'Antoni in Phoenix, similar philosophies, and you know, offensively could do similar things to what the Rockets are trying to do. Ty Lue, you know, I think is going to get consideration, and you know, we'll see where they go from there. The New Orleans one, I honestly don't have a great feel for beyond Ty Lue, and really, you know, Ty's an interesting guy. Like, we haven't even mentioned Jason Kidd, where I don't know if there's a landing spot for Jason, nor do I know if all it takes is one owner to believe, you know, accurately or not, that getting Jason Kidd helps you possibly get Giannis, you know, from their Bucks past. But, you know, so don't count Jason out somewhere. But I'm curious how Ty Lue sees his situation. If he was able to pick, you know, is he looking at New Orleans as a better spot or Philly? You know, roster wise, I think you would probably say New Orleans.
Especially
And the
long term,
Rockets,
yeah.
yeah. And the Rockets thing that you hit on too, and honestly, this part of the narrative, and I'm guilty of this as well, was kind of missing from the D'Antoni coverage, is that for all the interpersonal dynamics that led to Mike not coming back in Houston, I think quietly there was just good old-fashioned roster consideration too. And the idea that as great as James and Russ are, and Russ obviously finished pretty poorly, the shelf life for what they're trying to do, and the ceiling that appears to be there because they have not been able to bust through, makes that job, you know, interesting, because it's just, yeah, you're going to win a lot of games, but you know, what can you ultimately accomplish? And, you know, any coach coming through there is going to have to think about that stuff. And a quick subplot there too, is that Jeff Van Gundy was, you know, he was in the mix when D'Antoni got the job, and Les Alexander, the former Rockets owner, before Tillman Fertitta, was the driving force behind hiring D'Antoni. And at that time, Daryl Morey was very high on the possibility of doing Jeff Van Gundy. So, you know, I'm curious to see if Daryl wants to kind of hit the rewind button and try Jeff this time around.
I don't think there's been any. I think of two coaches whose names have popped up for more searches that haven't come to fruition. I think of Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. It always just seems like they get linked for any and every job. If Jeff came back, it would be interesting. I'd get a kick out of the, you know, Coca-Cola or Pepsi can on the sideline like he used to have with the Knicks. His brother Stan used to have that too. I will always remember in my younger 20s, not that I'm that much older now, I'm 31, but when I first started, the time Stan Van Gundy was with Dwight Howard at MSG, and he basically told everybody, you know, if I got fired later today, I'll go home and have a great day. And Dwight had an answer for that. But you touched on a lot of those coaching candidates. We certainly circled a lot of in-depth analysis on the Sacramento Kings. Certainly appreciated you coming on the pod with me, breaking it all down. It's good to talk with you in general. I'm glad that you're surviving out there in the bubble, you know, out there right now, going for a little walk, get some fresh air. Try to stay sane as best you can, brother, and I look forward to your coverage and whatnot coming out from the bubble going forward. And I'll speak to you soon. Stay safe out there, all right, my man?
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. Always good to talk to you.
Want to also thank everyone for tuning in and listening to the pod. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High podcast, you can like and subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.